Jeff.
We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
1, 2, 3.
Bullshit.
Welcome to the Todd Runs Sports Podcast. I'm your host, David Thay, joined by my Dog Nation amigos. Scott, the status ass, tell people what's up.
Shout out Chicago Bulls for making sure Tony Wrestler had no chance at playoff home game income.
Oh, shots fired. And everybody wants us to trade Trey Young so we can build around a taller, less expensive, less good version of Trey Young and DeJounte Murray. Dr. J, tell people what's up.
Is Charlie Condon eligible for the Heisman?
Got my vote.
I mean, is he eligible? Yes.
let's start the campaign.
Okay.
Hold on. Did he play quarterback in high school, perchance? Can we get a good quarterback controversy going? Ooh, it's not too late.
We're due. So we're here to talk to you about G-Day and other spring football adjacent topics. We're going to be a little bit briefer today because, honestly, it's a G-Day game. I have less to say about this G-Day game than I typically do. I was less interested in this G-Day game than I typically was. In fact, this was a miracle. I don't think we even texted about the game until the game was over.
I think you're right. I think there was no textage during the whole G-Day game.
Sent a single text message to each other while the game was going on. I was amazed I wasn't getting spoilers because I was driving back from my parents' house. And I was like,
yeah. And then, I was watching it on an hour or two delay. So I was kind of catching up. You know, I think a lot of people were. There's no quarterback.
Find it.
Yeah. There's no quarterback, you know, battle to watch and find out about.
Yeah.
You know, there's just.
And Beck's not an, even though we knew it was Beck last year, he's not an unknown. He's very, very, very much a known. So we got through the entire last season with no quarterback controversy. Scott, you're welcome. And we won't have another one this year.
Rashada should be the starter. He's more talented.
I was going to say, let Jaden Rashada get on campus and the message board thread will start.
Charlie Condon was a starting quarterback for 3 years at Marietta. Let's get him out there.
Somebody get that man a playbook.
He must have come in after Harrison Bailey.
The Walker School in Marietta. Sorry.
The Walker School. That makes more sense. Okay. All right. So quick thoughts on the game. By the way, Georgia did not win. Georgia did not lose. Ended in a 2020 tie. The ball was thrown. Let's see here. I'm doing some quick math in my head. Beck threw it 46 times. Stockton threw it 37 times. What is that, 83? Yeah. And then so two random 40 throws
times.
By Clark Drake.
Yeah, 40 times per team, basically.
Essentially 40 throws per team, essentially what you got, which is typical for a G-Day game. They don't run the ball. We say this every year. They don't run the ball a lot because they're not trying to beat up the running backs. The running back with the most yards, if you care about that kind of thing, Roger Robinson had a total of, I think it was 11 carries, 27 yards. Andrew Paul had a total of 4 carries, 44 yards. Etienne had 4 for 24. So there you go. If you care about that kind of stuff, Beck 25 of 46 for 301, 2 touchdowns and 2 picks, one which was completely not his fault. And then Stockton 19-32 for 235 and a touchdown. I will say this, and I wanted to see if y'all agree with this. Beck played much better than his numbers. True or false?
True.
Okay. I thought the same thing. If not for the controversial out of bounds call on the first touchdown, which I thought was a touchdown. Thought it live. If you had that touchdown and those yards and the dropped wheel route by Dominic Lovett early in the game, I mean, like, and there was, I think, one more, like, really easy dropped pass. I mean, you're talking about he's got 360 yards, 3 touchdowns, and you probably feel a little bit, if you're not informed, you probably feel a little bit better about how he played. Just overall, what y'all's thoughts on the quarterback plays in general?
He actually, I think he also twisted his ankle a little bit, like early in the game. I don't think
I
it had
any. See that.
It was just a little bit. I don't think it had anything at all to do with how he played, probably. But just from a standpoint of, could we see Kirby Smart like actually murder somebody on the field on national television? It was close.
Oh, I did see that. That's who was it? Was it was not Fairchild. It was
Tate. Was it Tate?
Tate Ratliff stepped on his foot. Yeah, you're right. I thought Kirby was about to choke him out right there on the field. You're 100% right. I do remember that.
Yeah, I thought Beck, you know, played pretty well. He played like Beck played a lot last year.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You know, it would have been nice to see him come out there and look like, holy crap, this dude's a lock, number one overall pick. super obvious Heisman favorite. You know, it's game over for everybody. Would have been nice to see that. Also, they were super, super vanilla on offense.
Yeah.
It's one game. You got some drops. You're playing a more talented defense than you'll play most of the time. So how much do you really take from that, from him not looking like he took a super clear step forward? We'll see how it plays out, right?
Could y'all tell by looking at him the difference in the muscle mass he had gained? Like what I was talking about, could y'all tell he had bulked up a little bit? And it's not, it's obviously never as obvious on TV as it is in person. In person, it was pretty blatant.
I had seen some, I don't know, videos or images or stuff of him elsewhere on and off the field during the off season and stuff. And you could just sort of tell he looked bigger just in street clothes.
I'm not sure I would have noticed just by looking at him on TV. I was kind of looking for it though, because of how much I've heard from people who've been at practice about how much bigger he is. A lot of people talked about how big he looked, how good he looked, how confident he looked, and that he seemed to be on another level. Kind of to Scott's point, I'm not sure we really saw that in the G-Day game. There wasn't really anything that happened that it was like, whoa, there's Carson Beck, and now there's Carson Beck.
Yeah.
That's the way people were talking about him in practice, for what that's worth.
Right.
I'm not sure we really saw that in the G-Day game.
Yeah. And honestly, if he's looked like that over, what do I have, 10, 12, 15 practices? Yeah, over multiple weeks and multiple scrimmages, that means more to me than just the G-Day game.
Yeah.
Though that's the one we get to see. So the other ones you have to evaluate based off of what people say and who's saying it. So that's always tough.
I love it when y'all go back and forth about like, oh, here's this rumor. Wait a minute. Who said it? And then y'all debate whether or not that person's credible. And I'm like, I don't know. I made this comment and y'all sort of kind of like, I don't think Gunnar Stockton's the guy yet. I'm not out on him. I said the exact statement I made was, man, if we had to play Gunnar Stockton right now, I wouldn't love it. And the numbers looked fine. I don't see it yet. And I'll be honest, I didn't necessarily see it with Carson Beck before last year. I mean, so it's okay, but I just want to know, were y'all just kind of mid on his performance like I was?
I think he definitely had a couple errant throws that should have been gimmies. And so that's something that's kind of standing out compared to what you see out of Beck, who's a little bit more senior, a little bit more polished, right? You're not going to accidentally ground a little swing pass at the running back's feet and just throw away 6 free yards, right?
Yeah.
So there's a couple of those things. And yeah, you know, he probably is a half tick slow processing sometimes.
Yeah.
But some of that's just, it's kind of a little bit more inconsistency kind of stuff, which is what you see with quarterbacks that haven't played a whole lot, I think. So yeah. And I think you said it offline, David, and it's a real game. You're going to be scheming for what he does well. You're going to be moving him around. You're going to like all that kind of stuff. And the other thing that, and this is a big unknown, very much in high school, he was the, you know, gamer kind of guy from an energy standpoint.
Yeah.
So I have no clue if he's going to go out there playing a game and all of a sudden just be freaking amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what he is? Yeah. You know what he is? Gunnar Stockton is a rich man's Stetson Bennett.
No, he's super Connor Shaw.
Kind of a rich man, Stetson Bennett.
A fair comp.
Yeah.
He's
better tools.
I say that because he's more built. He has a similar build to Connor Shaw than Stetson Bennett.
His body
some
looks
physicality
a lot like
to the running back or to the running part of the game.
And I'll freely admit that I definitely have some built-in opinion on Stockton that is not like, I couldn't even give you plays from last Saturday that were good or that were bad. Like I haven't been like grinding the high school tape of Gunnar Stockton or anything. I do have a lot of built-in opinion. That is sort of like rumor stuff.
Yeah.
This like the coaches think blank about Stockton, like, you know, the players feel blank about Stockton. And the thing about that is, it's been consistent since day one. Since he arrived on campus, it has been whatever, a year and a half now of people saying like everybody loves Gunner and like he is like gamer is a good word. Like he is a gamer. And like whenever he has the ball, you know, stuff happens. It, in fact, maybe that's why the reason, one of the reasons I'm thinking of Stetson, it kind of reminds me of that when he was young.
That's true.
And like, and he was running the scout team and everyone was like, who is that? You know? So
except the coaches have plans to play Gunnar Stockton on purpose in the future.
That is a major difference. And a scholarship.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is I do and have consistently heard that everybody in the building loves Gunnar Stockton for what it's worth.
And obviously a lot of what he does is negated because he couldn't really run. There's a couple times he took off and I was like, that would have been a 12 yard run for first down, but Gunnar just pulls up because he knows he can't run. Also, Beck is weird in the fact that this reminds me a little bit of our boy Stetson Bennett. But it's like Beck is interesting in that like he'll have a drive where he looks like trash and then he'll rip off three consecutive drives where you're just like, holy crap. And like he won't have an entire bad quarter like Stetson would. Stetson will put together like a couple stinker drives in a row. Beck will have like a bad drive or a couple bad throws, and the next five throws are just like put him in the first round of the draft. Like that's like this, that's like the Carson Beck experience. He never has like typically multiple bad drives in a row, but he'll have a bad drive or a few bad throws, and then he snaps out of it. And it's just like, it's almost like he was like daydreaming a little bit.
Five NFL throws in a row.
Exactly.
And he had a couple drives like that in the GA game. Like, oh, exactly. Wow, it's not clicking. And then it was like, ooh, first round pick. Yeah.
And I realized, this is my own observation. Whenever he gets hot, it's when he's throwing the ball across the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
He is so good throwing the ball across the middle of the field, as good as anybody. And when he's doing that, like he can throw a dig route and a seam route and a dig over route as well as any quarterback in America, college or pro.
And so he did have a couple good throws down the left sideline. One late to Ra-Ra Thomas for a very nice, very professional minor push off by Ra-Ra Thomas. And early in the game to love it on
a wheel route that was laid in there beautifully.
Yeah. So that was good to see him be a little bit more accurate on some of those deep shots.
The running backs, I'd written down like just a bunch of stream of consciousness notes because I was watching the game in bits and pieces after the fact. And I wrote this down. Our defense hates tackling Roger Robinson. I wrote that down after spring practice. I watched the GNA game. It was still true. They do not like tackling him. Some of them hit him, and I think they thought it was thud because they stopped their feet, and he did not. Man, he might truly end up being a problem. Like, he might be better than I thought, a lot faster than I thought.
Is it Dalen Everett? It was one of the cornerbacks. A little short pass to Robinson, and one of the quarterbacks just got the wrong end of that, right?
I thought it was Bolden, but it might not have been.
I can't remember.
I don't remember who it was either. Bolden was tackled Andrew Paul.
Yeah, that's right. He was, He was about a half step off on his angle. Coming in through the B gap, maybe? I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Paul bounced it outside. The Robinson one where he just ran through the cornerback like it was high school and kept going.
And it was like in slow motion. It was like the kid, you just see the kid just bounce off and fall to the ground.
Like, when that happened, all I hear in my head is the quote of Alex Gibbs, you know, the famous zone block offensive lineman coach. It was just like, we don't block corners. Like, we're going to make them tackle.
He does say that. Like, that is 100% what he says. We make corners tackle. But suffice to say, the running backs looked good, which will bring us to one of the things that we were surprised about coming out of spring in a second here. But Andrew Paul looked very good. He looked like the kid that we actually recruited. He looked explosive. He looked more powerful than I remember him looking previously in high school prior to the injury. And Roger Robinson, he looked quicker. He looked shiftier. And we talked about this, you know, when I went to practice, but he looks like, and y'all said this, he looks like the typical Del McGee running back who will be good at everything except for running the ball, running very, very fast.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, both of them looked really, really good. As you said, Andrew Paul also looked really good. You can absolutely have a good time this fall with a Thunder and Lightning drinking game. Like how many times our announcers in the Georgia game, like the first time that ETN takes a screen pass for 18 yards and then Roger Robinson comes in and trucks a linebacker for 4 yards, it's going to be Thunder and Lightning, like bottoms up. And listen, as we've been alluding to with the news about Andrew Paul going to the transfer portal, right now, it's Robinson and ETN. I mean, that's who,
that's the show.
Roderick Robinson and ETN.
Yeah.
That's like, those are the running backs for the Clemson game for sure.
And let's get into this. I was like very surprised at Andrew Paul leaving. Jay, Scott, y'all kind of had your own separate takes. So I kind of want to recreate the discussion we had. And Jay, go ahead and share your opinion on this first, because
some of this depends on your definition of the word buried, I guess. But I think where we got to talking about this was when I said Andrew Paul looked up and basically sees himself buried on the depth chart.
Yeah.
So is it that big of a surprise that he's gone? When I say he's buried, what I mean is he's basically fourth string. To me, from what we've heard in practice and what we saw in G-Day, he's 100% certainly third string. I mean, he's definitely behind Rod Robinson and ETN. I'm basically counting on the fact, and it seems that Andrew Paul is as well, that he's either behind Branson Robinson now or he's going to be behind Branson Robinson
when he's
later.
Healthy.
So maybe he's actually fourth string on Labor Day, and maybe he's not, but he's almost certainly fourth string by Halloween, unless somebody else gets hurt. So to me, like, did he look good in the G-Day game? Yes.
Yeah.
Could he have gotten some carries? He definitely could have, and he certainly would have if anybody got hurt. So that would be the argument for him to stay. I'm not surprised that he basically felt like he's probably a fourth string running back for all intents and purposes, and that's what got him out the door.
And I guess my take on this, and Scott, I think you shared kind of his thought, was why doesn't he think he can pass Roger Robinson in the fall, by the fall? Like, and there are carries for three backs. Now, you said it, Jay, like, the carries we gave to our third back last year, depending on the week, was minimal, and he could go somewhere else and get better carries. But then Scott had some good points about that, even leaving to go get be the number one back at another school.
Well, another thing, too, is a lot of it depends on how healthy Roderick Robinson is or isn't, or not Roderick Robinson, Branson Robinson.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. That's the real unknown.
He is not cleared for contact right now.
Yeah.
All of the reports I've seen is that people are saying they expect him to be cleared for contact like in September when the season starts. And that maybe he could get some carries in October, November as the season wears on, right? To me, that sounds like, I mean, it looked like Andrew Paul was third.
Yeah.
And it's hard to see him actually being fourth because you have four scholarship running backs on the roster right now, and one of them is hurt, so you're kind of third. If you had all three freshman running backs come in the spring and they were all there practicing and it was a crowded room and there was splitting a million carries left and right, you know, I could see how you might be looking at the tea leaves and think, oh, they could pass me or whatever. I don't know. As the third running back, who's not a true freshman who will block, he was going to play and get real carries
and can catch
Now, all this being said, you know, I mentioned he's an out-of-state guy that was recruited by Del McGee.
Yeah. And that was a good point that y'all brought up, is that his high school, his coach is gone.
Which means if he wants to go on the transfer portal, he could go to one of the other schools that he previously liked.
Yeah.
Right? So he could, I don't know, Clemson doesn't really take transfers, so I guess he wouldn't go to Clemson. But he could go back to Texas and probably get paid a lot of money and be a starter. But yeah, the other thing about this too, right, is it was the reports and all plans to enter a transfer portal. That's how these things always get reported.
Yeah.
A lot of guys plan to enter the transfer portal and don't ever actually manage to enter the transfer portal.
Daniel Harris.
Even the report of he plans to enter the transfer portal doesn't mean he's gone. Now, obviously it's a higher percentage than nothing. And he certainly could. We still have to lose a couple more players to get down to 85. So
what are we at? Are we at 91? I don't remember.
I think I've got us actually at 86 right now.
Oh, wow.
That's what a lot of people think the number is.
We're,
right? So you can count all the dudes you think are on scholarship. And then all like, okay, the punter from Duke that's coming. Or is he a kicker or a punter? Whatever. Is announced he's transferring, I don't know, a few days, a week ago, whatever. Is he going to be on scholarship?
Oh,
right. You know, it seems like Jaden Rashada is about to come be a fourth quarterback. If Rashad is not the fourth quarterback, they're trying to get somebody to be a fourth scholarship quarterback. So maybe it's 86, maybe it's 87 or 88, maybe it's 84. Like, we don't have a clue. So you know, it is possible that the coaches, you know, have made it clear, hey, when Branson Robinson comes back and all these freshmen, there's not going to be enough carries to go around. We've never carried seven running backs on the roster before. We always try and carry six. Now, it would seem more likely for the coaches to say, hey, Branson Robinson, you need to go somewhere where you can get healthy and play. By the time you get healthy, you'll get buried, instead of the guy who's clearly in line for carries. Mm-hmm. But he could have just wanted to go. He could have wanted to go back to Texas. He, you know, SMU has a lot more money than they have wins, but you'll get carries and cash. You know, you can always go there.
And you make a good point. Just his coach is gone. Like, and you made a good point in saying, and I think maybe what you said, Jay, but his coach is gone. And that also does matter to some people. The offense only put up 20 points. I think we all agreed, just like with Beck, the offense played better than that output. What did y'all think about the defense just in general? And don't let me leave out anything on the offense. Actually, you know, let me back up. A couple standouts on the offense. That Colby Young tutty, sheesh. Whoa, that's what people have been seeing?
Yeah, that's basically what all the reports have been, is that if it's a contested ball, like, it's probably going to be his.
And he caught another one on I think it was a dig route that Beck just stuck it in his stomach. Stuck it right in his hands where not very many guys could catch it.
Yep. So that was nice to see. He's good. I mean, there's not a high first-round pick wide receiver on the roster, you know. But you got a lot of veteran guys that have NFL futures. You know, and maybe you have – you have some guys that could be first round types, but you don't have anybody that has played to that level yet.
Yes.
Right. Like, there's enough talent where it's like, sure, Dylan Bell could have a breakout year and be like a clear first round kind of guy. Or you could have seven dudes that get 500 yards receiving.
Yeah. Which is more likely.
Right. And that, like, there's not an AJ Green in the group or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yet, could it be Kirby's best receiver room? You
from depth? Yeah.
Like, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could make that argument for sure.
Hard to say that before we've played the season.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, just in terms of projections, you couldn't talk about the offense in G-Day and not say a little something about what we saw from the receivers as a group.
Yes.
Overall, a lot of them looked good.
Transfer guys looked good. Mm-hmm. Young guys looked good. Mm-hmm. Big guys looked good. Little fast guys looked good. Yeah. I mean, they all had their moments. Legitimately, like, in the discussion already for Kirby's best receiver room.
I will probably guess that it won't be the best receiver room. However, it may be as productive or as good on the field because our receiver room has been snake bit for 6 years straight. Mm-hmm. So if you go by the standard rules of how many wide receivers do we have injured, take whoever the top two receivers are for this year and give them three games combined. And then are they still the best receiver we've had? Because that's what we get every year. It's ridiculous.
Y'all do realize we at one point had George Pickens, Ladd McConkey, A.D. Mitchell, and Brock Bowers on the same roster.
And Jermaine Burton.
And Jermaine Burton. And Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint. We had that. That was we had that on the roster at one point. Like, that's crazy to think about. But never held it.
And Darnell Washington. And
yeah.
Yeah. And never, ever were they all healthy at the same time.
And if you are a good Georgia football fan, you have returned to the brick wall against which you've been banging your head for years that is Arian Smith.
Oh, God.
Because all through spring practice, all anybody's talking about is how good Arian Smith looks, and he is out there and he's healthy and he's fast and he's a leader in the room. And he had some moments in G-Day, like it's right back to
then Arian Smith. Then drop a slant on third down.
Did drop a slant. It's right back to, you're not going to hurt me this year. This is going to be the year for Arian Smith. I'm just telling you,
I ain't drinking that Kool-Aid anymore, man. I can't do it. I can't do it. I want to, though.
I will say with him, the most positive part about it for spring is just that they're having him do less reps in practice on special teams and devote more reps to wide receiver.
Yeah.
And that in general, there's been lots of reports about how far he's come as a blocker. because part of the thing with him was, I mean, obviously they're staying healthy for the first number of years, but is that he wouldn't get a whole lot of snaps because he wasn't an every down blocker kind of guy. Right. I mean, not like you look at some either. Of his, no, but, and you look at some of his early seasons, you know, some of it was health related, but it'd be the kind of thing where he would play 11 snaps during the season and people didn't realize he only played 11 snaps because he had six catches for 200 yards and two touchdowns. And so people just look at it like, oh, he had 200 yards, but he's never in there on any run. So anyway, there is a chance that he could play a bigger role just based on the fact that he could actually play a meaningful number of snaps.
And here's the problem. If he doesn't, Anthony Evans is ready to take those reps. Boy, does he look good. Woo!
Yes. Man. There is also that.
Yeah.
I was gonna say he had some moments in G-Day. Is he the new Ladd McConkey? Is better than that? Does he have a higher ceiling than Ladd McConkey? I don't know. You're talking about first round receivers. That could be our guy, Ladd. Anthony Evans, boy, he looks good.
He looks like, yeah. He looks like what we thought Dominic Lovett was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I might also say that Dominic Lovett now looks like what we thought Dominic Lovett was.
Yeah.
He looks better. He looks better than he did last year. And
like, I'm still mad at him dropping that wheel route. But
that drop was bad, but then otherwise he was good. Yeah.
And one thing I want to say real quick before I move over to the defense is that with Colby Young, you know, the contested catches, that's a skill set we haven't had since 21? Was that the last year that A.D. Mitchell was healthy? Is that right?
I actually think that Rosemary Jacksaint was a very good contested catch guy. In general, now it wasn't so much on the downfield jump ball contested catch, but think about all the short and intermediate routes, you know, hitches, ends, outs.
He caught
all
so
that.
Many slants and digital guys draped all over him. That's a fair point.
Third and six, you know, it's going to be tight, and it's like throwing it to Rosemary Jacksaint because the big old hands are coming out and he's catching this ball and it's a first down.
Yeah,
I think Colby Young will get a lot of that kind of stuff. It might look a little bit different because, you know, a few more fades or whatever, but.
But I mean, Rosemary Jacksaint was good at that, but that's not what David says we've been missing.
Yeah.
I think when David says since 2021, we haven't had the downfield contested catch. I think.
Especially not in the red zone. What's all we were, our red zone contested catch guy was Brock Bowers.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a couple of those highlight moments.
It's like, okay, let's put our tight end and throw him a fade because he's the best guy that can play the ball in the air and he's 6'4". That's what it turned into, which is not bad because Brock Bowers is a unicorn, but like, it would be nice if you had like him and an A.D. Mitchell or that skill set just in general. All right, we spent way too much time on the offense.
Sorry, and honestly, Ra-Ra Thomas is also that. He wasn't a huge part of the team last year, but
that was in his film at Mississippi State, though. That was a thing that he did like regularly at Miss State. So that's in his toolbox.
No, we're talking about our receiver room, and we've got two guys who led their SEC team in receiving, 2 years ago.
That's true. Yeah.
It's a good deep room. Please stay healthy.
Okay. All right. We're taking care of our wives. Going to kill us. All right. So on defense, I'm gonna name some names that pop to me. Obviously, we'll start with Raylan Wilson, who was a tackling machine in the first half, right?
Tackling fuel.
And then CJ Allen was a tackling machine in the second half. And they were just getting everything. They looked fast.
I thought Jalen Walker looked good.
He looked healthy, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He looked healthy. He looks like an NFL player, just like body frame movement wise out there, like just filling out the uniform.
245.
He looks.
Oh my
big.
Gosh.
Yeah. So.
So like, but yeah, I mean, these guys. This is the mold. This is in the Roquan mold. The
Mykael Williams is always good. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The why can't I think of our All American linebacker from 2 years ago?
N'Kobe Dean.
N'Kobe Dean. Thank you. Good gosh. We've gone with backers that are – now, these guys are a little bit bigger than N'Kobe, but I'll go and tell you, when I was standing next to that group in person, like, you're like, are these really big safeties or are these actually linebackers? Now, the outside linebackers, you don't think that about. They're all giants.
Yeah, and when you have Jalen Walker playing inside linebacker snaps, and it's like him and Smail Munden, those guys are longer and rangier and look like big middle linebackers, and they can both kind of flex to edge – positions and pass rush roles, you know, in packages.
But Allen and Wilson, though, are not big guys.
Yeah. Allen is much more stocky build. Mm-hmm. I think, actually, as far as like weight and thumping, he has the potential to be that physical kind of guy. And then Bowles and Raylan Wilson are like, you know, this guy's a super safety who's just going to be like running fast and making plays. But they're really good football players, but they have to be carrying just enough weight and get just good enough at avoiding blocks and getting off blocks and not get swallowed up.
The linebacker room is crazy. We talked about it last year, but it's such that Jamon Dumas-Johnson, who, listen, y'all, can ball. Like, he is a dude. And Jamon Dumas-Johnson looked around and was like, yeah, it's time for me to go. I mean,
Because he's like, I ain't sharing reps with these guys. And then you watch the guys and you're like, yeah, you were definitely going to share reps with these guys. So if you wanted to get all the reps, you made a good career choice.
Yeah.
Because you were definitely going to be sharing reps with these guys.
If Raylan Wilson is ready to play, you know, starter or quasi-starter snaps, you may have him, C.J. Allen, Jaylen Walker, and Smail Mundon having to split two positions worth of snaps.
Yeah.
Troy Bowles looks like a dude.
Before you add in the fact that Justin Williams may end up being better than all these dudes.
He's going to be playing special teams.
It is a crowded room. One takeaway on defense, all the five-star true freshman dudes looked like freaking dudes. It doesn't mean they're all going to play huge impact roles as true freshmen. Mentally, there's tons to get to, but just as far as like, do they look filled out enough to play? Like height, weight, speed? Do they look like they belong out on that field? I thought for sure.
With one exception, the two freshman DBs, one of them is not physically ready to play, but skill-wise is there. And then I don't think Bolden was a five-star, was he?
He's not ready to thump. He's not a thump.
He looked really green to me. He lost the jump ball to Evans. He took a bad angle on the Andrew Paul play, missed a tackle at the goal line. That was all in the first series. He's still a little green.
So I'm saying, to me, that's polish and being green and not being ready to play, but that's not physically having the tools.
Oh, yeah.
Ellis Robinson is actually also looks polished.
Oh, no, Ellis Robinson's got it. Like,
yeah,
he has it.
A lot of times we have true freshman cornerbacks come realished. Sertana, Alabama was one of those guys.
Yeah, he was so polished.
Ellis still wasn't Robinson, good, but you had Stingley at LSU, but not a lot of guys that can really come in and be starter on those caliber teams as freshmen.
Now, my biggest observation of the secondary is twofold. One, I thought we looked very good at corner. I thought all the corners that played looked good. And I told y'all this in the spring. Daniel Harris looks really good. Dalen Everett, how good did he look, guys? I told y'all he'd gotten better.
He got mossed.
He did.
He can play. It's a jump ball. Somebody has to win it. Colby Young's good at that.
I literally wrote this down. There was a lot of completions against DBs that had good to great coverage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure if that's good for the offense or bad for the defense, but like that one, like he's literally got his hand in Colby Young's, on top of Colby Young's helmet, trying to pull that ball off and he can't get it out. Like, okay, if that's what it takes for people to beat you, I'm good with it. So I thought he was good. I thought, and I think y'all saw it, safety is another story, man.
It's another story. The corners look so good. Mm-hmm. And the safeties look so suspect, which is the reason that you're hearing conversation about, does somebody like Dalen Everett need to move on over to star to deepen up sort of the middle of the defensive backfield if, you know, we've got other guys that can play on the outside? I have no idea if that's ultimately going to be an actual in-season solution or not. But that's how different the feeling is at corner than it is at safety and star right now.
And Dan Jackson, we talked about, he's good enough. He's good enough. And if you have him next to Malachi Starks, that's true. Mm-hmm. When you have him next to David Daniel or Jake Pope, you're not beating good teams with that safety unit. You're not. Because Janelle Aguero, we all saw, is very up and down still. He's still a little bit green. I think he's going to be good, but he ain't Javon Bullard.
No, not yet.
And honestly, I would not anticipate Everett playing any actual star role.
No, I wouldn't either.
The only way he will kick inside, in my mind, is when Kamari Lassard played, quote, star, which was a pass defense only position against Luther Burden, which is basically by definition not star for our defense.
It's literally him just shadowing Luther Burden.
Yeah, it's just that. And it's a way to get three cornerbacks on the field. Now, as soon as they start telling us, hey, Jonah Aguero's taking some snaps at safety next to Malachi Starks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're seeing Everett in there or Daniel Harris in that role or something.
Yeah.
Then that becomes real. But I don't think Everett or Harris, and most certainly not Humphrey, are dudes that are going to like bang and fight and scrap at star the way the coaches want their star to play.
And
like,
I don't,
when if we had a star that wasn't like just kind of a mean, nasty physical player, those guys are listed, the outside cornerbacks, those are their outside cornerbacks.
Yeah. The last guy we had that was William Poole, but he was a stopgap star.
Yeah.
He literally was like, we can't find anybody else to get through this season, so Poole go to star. But like you said, the guys that we put there, Tyke Smith and Javon Bullard, those guys try to rip your head off if they get a shot at you. Janelle Aguero's like that. That's why I'm not sure he'd be an answer at deep safety. I don't know if he's got that. I know these guys are all great athletes, but you know,
I think he probably would. Now, obviously, he hasn't been practicing there, so you'd have some getting used to it and that kind of stuff. But you know, he's covering Lovett in the slot, and he's running with Lovett and just fine and staying with him. Now, he didn't make a play on the ball quite like the way you'd want him to, right? Yeah. So, like, that's some – and then we see this with young DBs, you know, on our team all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. but the physical tools are there, and it's going to be, you know, improving. But yeah, safety doesn't worry me because you have Malachi Starks. And then it's like, okay – if the corners are killing it and Aguero's actually playing pretty well and you got Malachi Starks, can we find a safety to go out there and play decent? Like, we can find somebody.
If you're above average at two positions on the outside, exceptional at one, can you just be average at the other two? And we've had that exact thing before. We were average at corner 2 years ago. We won the national championship.
Yeah.
And we were average at both corners.
When has our safety play been bad?
We haven't had bad safety play in years.
Yeah,
I mean, since Kirby has been there, we have not had bad safety play. Even going back to like the who's the guy that had our Dominic Sanders days? We've been good at safety. So you make a good point. Moving down to the front, linebackers were good. Our linebackers were impressive. Inside backers were impressive. Outside corners were impressive. Safeties, meh. And then we had the play up front. Obviously, the standout was clearly Mykel Williams, who. That's the first time that I can, in my mind, say I remember Mykel Williams making four or five standout plays in the same small span of time where he was clearly dominating a game. Like, I know it's a scrimmage, but I can't say that throughout a lot of Mykel Williams' careers. It's been flashes. Do y'all feel the same way, or am I crazy?
Maybe the closest he ever came to that was against Florida State. When he was playing this new position – or at least half of this new position.
Yeah.
that was maybe the next best we've seen him be compared to G-Day. I think there's a reason for that.
Yeah. I know from a PFF standpoint, the Florida State game was his highest graded game
really?
Ever. Yeah. The first time he played that position, which has kind of always been his natural position in my mind. I think his freshman year, obviously, it was a lot more flashes. I think last year as a sophomore, he actually strung together a lot of serious impact plays, the only one doing it on the defensive line. So he busting through, beating his guys, like knifing through a double team, and the running back's like, oh, I'm just going to go this way instead, and our other guys are getting blocked.
So you're literally describing Grady Jarrett for the Falcons his entire career.
But still, that was still a little bit of a step forward. Hopefully he just killing people, first round pick, you know, all that stuff.
And other than that, it was the old heads and Kristen Miller, who's apparently possibly going to transfer, but maybe not, but maybe so. But, you know, it's, you know, Walther and Stackhouse, those guys that I swear are not Walther, Stackhouse and
Brinson,
who I swear have been there since Stetson Bennett was, you know, a freshman. They're just themselves. They're their normal, solid, play their gaps, not cause a lot of disruption, not make a lot of mistakes, guys.
Not to mention, still there, good old Chaz Chambliss.
Chaz Chambliss, who
maybe looks like a little step faster. I don't know. Like Chaz was, he had a little extra something to him. I thought
he ain't no smaller. Dude's still jacked.
He's always had pretty decent straight line speed.
Yeah, good straight line.
It's just that like the side to side, the stop start that gets him in trouble.
He has no pass rush toolbox, guys. None. Like zero. Oh. I watched them do the drills. He has no pass rush toolbox.
And that's what he was in high school as far. I mean, he had big sack numbers.
Yeah.
And it was all just bull rushing through people.
And running. And he played inside and they just sent him to the football. Like they blitzed him and blitzed him and blitzed him. And he was fast and strong in their body. And he made a lot of tackles. So,
yeah. Yeah. The Jordan Hall made some plays.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And Xavier McLeod had some flashes. McLeod,
that's what I was going to say. He had some plays and you hope he could be kind of an X factor. I mean, you know, you're thinking 15 snaps a game for him or something. I don't know. I mean, we'll see how good he is, but you'd love to get that out of him.
I would say I was encouraged with the defensive line play.
Yes.
Because obviously last year it wasn't phenomenal. It wasn't terrible, right? Mm-hmm. Anything like that. But it wasn't phenomenal. It wasn't, you know, quite where we needed it to be. I don't know that this year, you know, it's not like, oh, this is 2021. We got a bazillion first rounders on the defensive line. But we have more depth of non-freshman NFL type players. You know, it's like last year, it was kind of like, okay, if Ja Jarrett can work into the rotation and be taking some serious nose tackle snaps as the season wears on, like that'll be huge and could really help the team. But you were counting on a young guy who mm-hmm. I think was a true freshman, and you're kind of hoping, hey, I hope he can pick up this role, right? And he never really did. You know, and Jordan Hall is kind of like, okay, hopefully we can get good play out of him as a super talented true freshman. And he got in the game and he played and he had some impact and stuff. But he'll have more impact this year, right?
And TID wasn't healthy last year.
And TID wasn't healthy, and he is very talented. Yeah. Obviously, you now are adding Xavier McLeod, who is also noticeably not a true freshman.
Yeah.
Right? So now you're looking at it, and you're like, oh, we have all of these talented guys, you know, like Christian Miller and all of these guys. They're all a year older, and none of them are true freshmen now. So now instead of being like, hey, we got four veteran guys and four completely unproven guys, you're like, oh, we actually have eight veteran guys. Are they all going to be first-round dudes? No.
No.
But some of them are going to step up, and you have that depth. I mean, like late in the Alabama game, and Stackhouse is worn down, who's your backup nose? Who can take those snaps? You didn't have anybody. And now, like Jay, like you're saying, if McLeod can take 15 snaps a game, if Jordan Hall can take a few snaps at nose, you know, you're not worn out late in the game.
And the biggest thing that I see, and this will be the biggest concern I have for this team on defense, do we have a disruptor? I think we do have one of Mikael Williams. That's now we may not have four like we had, you know, in 2021 where we had, you know, the best defensive lineman on our team was coming off the bench, which was crazy. I'm not expecting that, but can we get one really consistent interior disruptor? Not even a first round pick quality, but one consistent one.
I think, it, you know, like you're saying, it'll be Mikael Williams being your very consistent disruptive. Yeah. And then it will be a by committee where it's like, okay, Warren Brinson, Christian Miller, Tyrion Ingram Dawkins, Hall, right? And maybe, I don't know, whoever else I left out. There's another one that is kind of disruptive. And it's like Xavier McLeod. It's like, okay, these are big athletic bodies that all of them can be disruptive at times. So hopefully between Mikael being, if he is what we think he is this year, and the rest of those guys, that's a step up in how disruptive you are from last year.
So two reasons why this defense could be better than last year, and I'll start with the first one. We're going to be better at corner than we were last year, I think. Mm-hmm. And second, we are better at linebacker than we were last year. Like
We are better at linebacker. I mean, as you're talking about disruptors, like one of those is Jalen Walker. Like he doesn't play defensive line. He doesn't even really probably play outside linebacker. But like on third down, like Jalen Walker's coming from somewhere. That is
very
like,
fast.
That's a problem.
And Munden too. And hopefully linebackers Munden's, is healthier than last year.
Yeah.
Because that was such a huge part of it.
Yeah, it was. Well, all right, guys. Overall, we think that the offense has got the most depth at receiver that it's had. We like our running back room. We liked it a lot better 5 days ago before Andrew Paul left. We still like our running back room. We like our starting quarterback. And our offensive line, we didn't even mention because it, other than sliding Cedric Van Pran out, it's essentially the same offensive line. I mean, I know we lost Mims. I get it. But, like, the guys that are filling in are guys that played a lot. Like, we're playing four guys minus the center that have played a lot of football. So you don't really worry about the offensive line because we play so many guys there. And then on defense, we worry about the mediocre play behind our All-American safety. But other than that, we feel pretty good about the unit. So my internet's crapping out. Any final thoughts, guys?
The whole team, you think we're worse than last year?
Ooh.
So I guess tangentially related to that question, how would you say the depth is compared to previous Kirby teams?
The depth is as good as any team we've had. 2021 had really good depth also.
Yeah.
But in places. The depth, though, might be the best of any team we've had. But the top-end talent ceiling is probably a little bit lower than some of the other teams.
So I asked that because the guy that used to be the director of player personnel or whatever and went into the private sector to work half as much and get paid twice as much or whatever 2 years ago, after G-Day, said he thinks this is the best roster depth they've had top to bottom since Kirby's been there. He said, and he said, just barely a little bit better depth wise top to bottom than 2021.
Yeah.
Not quite as many absolute freak studs.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I would say too.
Yeah. And once he said that, I started thinking about it. I was like, well, it's probably pretty right. Cause we're looking at stuff like Jordan Hall being your eighth defensive lineman and like, wow, this guy's kind of a freak. And we're looking at, oh, our eighth offensive lineman is actually really good. Can we get him enough snaps so he doesn't transfer? And wow, we got eight wide receivers that we like. And, you know, and oops, we're bringing in another quarterback. Just got to have enough in and just because for whatever reason.
A quarterback whose probably best comp is Michael Penix. If you haven't watched him, you watch his high school film. It's him throwing the ball very, very far, very, very fast, a lot. And being mobile. So that's the comp I have is Michael Penix. That may make you happy or sad. That's what I think. But I don't really want to talk about him because I think he's going to be gone by next year anyway.
The draft losses in particular, right? The draft losses after 2021 and after 2022, I mean, were crazy. And I mean, it was even crazier how good we were despite that.
Yeah.
Draft losses after 2023. I mean, who among them are you really going to think this season, man, I wish we had? Obviously, it's Brock Bowers. But after that, I mean, is there going to be at any point this season where we're like, we would have won that game if we had Ladd McConkey?
Yeah. Or like, Ladd didn't play very much last year. People forget that.
As good as Kamari Lassiter was, like, obviously, if we could have him on the team, I'd whatever. But I mean, like, we've kind of got like more Kamari Lassiters. I'm just saying the draft losses in particular, plenty of guys have gone to the portal. But there hasn't really been anybody that's gone to the portal that's like, man, we were really counting on that. Yeah. We just did not lose as much after last year, and the depth it shows.
There will be times where we're missing Bullard and Tyke Smith.
Like, okay, that's absolutely fair. No, that's fair.
Write it in stone. And obviously,
I will co-sign that.
Brock Bowers, which is like the, you know, seven asterisk caveat of all caveats, like, does that even count, right? Like you said, Jay, it was like, duh. But yeah, Bullard and Tyke Smith, there'll be times where we miss. But you're right. This year, we're going to, quote, only lose 10 draft picks or something.
Right.
And you're only going to have 2 to 4 first rounders. And of those four guys that potentially could go first round, two of them missed most of the season due to injury. Well, and Brock Bowers missed. I mean, okay. You have four guys that could be first round, which is Bowers, Mims, McConkey, Lassiter, in theory. They won't all be first rounds, but just weird things happen. Of those four guys, Lassiter's the only one that played the whole season.
Yeah,
true.
Right? So it's like, yeah, you're still losing a lot of talent that was, you know, in the pool rehabbing. So, you know, we won't miss them as much because we already didn't have them.
And this is the life we live as Georgia fans.
It's tough, until man.
NIL totally ruins it, which will happen. All right, guys, that's it for tonight. Dr. J, tell the people adios.
3 out of 4 ain't bad.
And Scott, tell the people adios. And
4 out of 5 sounds better.
This has been Dave with Dave, the Tide Run Sports Podcast. That's it for today. Thank you for listening.